Sounds True presents Producer's Pick, a podcast dedicated to bringing you compelling, captivating, and intriguing selections from our programs. This week's episode, The Importance of Suffering, comes from the audio program Meister Eckhart's Living Wisdom, Indestructible Joy, and the Path of Letting Go, with Jim Finley. Here is what Randy Rourke, a producer at Sounds True, has to say about this week's producer's pick.
What if you could have a great spiritual advisor, like the 14th century Christian mystic Meister Eckhart, or maybe the 20th century's Thomas Merton? Well, Jim Finley has had both. Thomas Merton was his spiritual advisor as a young monk at Gethsemane Abbey, and for over 50 years, the sermons of Meister Eckhart have been a constant companion and a tool by which he's investigated what it means to be alive, to be human, to understand both his mortality and his immortality. In this selection from Meister Eckhart's Living Wisdom, Jim talks about how Eckhart's sermons have helped him to redefine two of the most mysterious and difficult human experiences: suffering and detachment. Not only turning them into tools for awakening, but also into compassionate advisors and friends.
You can download the entire program, Meister Eckhart's Living Wisdom, at SoundsTrue.com. And now our producer's pick, The Importance of Suffering, with Jim Finley.
Look back at your own life up till now and ask, how has it come to pass that you have come to be who you so far have come to be right up to this moment? The winding path, the circuitous journey, you couldn't have planned it if you tried. And is it not true that the most transformative events are not the aspects that arose out of your action? They're the aspects of the event that arose, of the transformation that occurred to you and being transformed in that interactive event. And is it not also true that a lot of what you know today about life or about the preciousness of life or about compassion has come to you through suffering? There's a firm commitment to wholeness. There's a firm commitment to nonviolence. There's a firm commitment to respect, even reverence, the gift of life. There's a firm commitment to heal suffering wherever it is present as best we can. But here's the thing, that our inner peace does not depend on the outcome of the effort to deliver ourselves from suffering. Because our inner peace doesn't depend on anything. Because there comes unexpectedly welling up out of the depths of suffering a treasure, a kind of graced realization that we never would have come to had we not undergone the suffering. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are people who share their story of recovery, strength, and hope. And in open meetings that I've gone to in Alcoholics Anonymous, some of these stories that people share are pretty sad stories. The wreckage of the past, and through their addiction, the pain that they inflicted upon people that who loved them, and the pain they inflicted upon themselves, like the tragedy of it all. And then the person says, the person who's really ripe with recovery, they'll say how grateful they were for their alcoholism, because through that alcoholism and through the suffering of their alcoholism, they were transformed. And they came to a spiritual awakening that's paradoxically liberating and bears witness to everybody in the room to the peace that surpasses understanding. As a psychotherapist, and in my own therapy, just working through trauma, this thing about suffering, about undergoing suffering as transformative, there are moments in therapy in which when we risk sharing what hurts the most, in the presence of someone who will not invade us or abandon us, we unexpectedly come upon within ourselves the pearl of great price. We unexpectedly come upon the invincible preciousness of ourselves in our suffering. This discovery of this preciousness is not the end of suffering, but rather is the ground to stand on that gives us the courage to face our suffering, to work through our suffering, and to know within ourselves the transformative power of suffering. So just as then, there is the freedom of images in the midst of images, such as in the words of lovers, in the words of poets. Just as there's freedom for preferential love in the midst of preferential love, such as through the loss of one person being intimately accessed by the preciousness of all persons. So too, this is freedom from the tyranny of suffering in the midst of suffering, and this is detachment. Detachment is a kind of equanimity that arises in the ultimately trustworthy nature of the unfolding of life as it is. And it's endless. So I'd like to end here with a little image on meditation and detachment. We're talking more about meditation later as a way to experientially access Eckhart's teachings. But this is just an image that I share. I share this primarily when I'm sharing reflections on Thomas Merton, but it's very germane here with Eckhart. There's a form of Hindu meditation in which the practice is to count one's breaths up to 10. And so you inhale real deep and slow, you hold the breath for just a second, then you exhale real slow, and you silently say 1. Then you inhale real slow, you hold it for just a second, you exhale real slow and say 2, and so on up to 10. Until you have the least distracting thought, and then you have to go back to 1. And you discover that there's a meditation teacher, a meditation master, who teaches this form of meditation to a meditation community in the city in which you live. And this community meets every morning at 5:00. They're very dedicated. And they practice this meditation for 1 hour before they go out to work. And you show up for your first session and you sit down and the meditation teacher explains the method and says, are there any questions? And it seems pretty clear to you what the guidelines are. And the meditation teacher rings the bell, they all bow, and you sit there for an hour in this practice. And your practice goes like this, 1 back to 1, 1 back to 1, 1 back to 1, 1 back to 1. An hour later, the bell rings. The teacher says, are there any questions? You raise your hand and say, yes. You say, I didn't get very far. The teacher says, do not worry about it. We're going to do this tomorrow. We're going to do this every day until we die. There's no rush. And so you come back the next day, you sit down to get started. Are there any questions before we begin? Very good, let us begin. Rings the bell, everyone bows, and you sit there for an hour, 1 back to 1, 1 back to 1, 1 back to 1. And you sit like that. 3 years later, about halfway through the meditation, and there was no way to see this was going to happen, you get to 2. You get surprised about it. And realizing you're distracted, you have to go back to 1. And then you realize, I'll bet the next time I get to 2, I'll get distracted, I have to go back to 1. And you realize that 2 is a distraction, then you have to go back to 1. And then it starts to dawn on you, I'm not going to make it. Now the truth is, you never were going to make it. That's God's truth. You never were going to make it. But had the ego not thought that it could attain something, it wouldn't show up to do it. Because unless there's something to attain, the ego will not seek it. It was a trick. The goal of meditation is not to get to 10. It isn't to get to 9 or to 8 or to 7 or to 6 or to 4 or 3. The goal of meditation is learning how to go back to 1. For all things are possible for the person who goes back to 1. Why? Because 1 is just a hair's breadth from 0. And 0 is the infinite poverty of God that's pouring itself out as the infinite fertility of 1, the infinite fertility of 2, the infinite fertility of 3. This, it seems to me, is the enigmatic and paradoxical lesson of detachment, that we can't help ourselves, because then we even get attached to the idea of becoming detached. I share with people sometimes, I was on a plane, And I was taking notes on St. John of the Cross. I was, by hand, I was writing up my notes on John of the Cross. And in the Ascent of Mount Carmel, Book 1, St. John of the Cross is speaking something very similar to what Eckhart is talking about. And John of the Cross is talking about detachment from sensory gratification as a way to mystical liberation. And so I'm making my notes on detachment from sensory gratification. And the attendant comes down the aisle, I ask for coffee. And when the attendant gives me my coffee, I sip my coffee and my coffee's cold. I turn around to get the person's attention and the person's moved on, they don't hear me. So I push the little buzzer, the little ding, and I continue writing my notes on detachment from sensory gratification. The person still didn't come back. I looked over my shoulder. I pushed it twice, like ding, ding. Why can't you get any service around here? And then I realized what I was doing. In writing my notes on detachment from sensory gratification, I was attached to my sensory gratification, and I was embarrassed. Why was I embarrassed? Because I was detached of my image of myself as being detached. That if we let it, if we just get vulnerable, Eckhart would say, come out from behind the curtain. Just get vulnerable.